Story time. With the wind whipping at my nose, suited up in Matt Forte throwback jersey and a Bears winter hat, sitting alongside some three good friends who luckily went to a game and made it a great time, we marched up those steps right past the ginormous Lombardi and Lambeau statues, and away we went. In a game I wasn't expecting much out of, it proved to be a thrilling back-and-forth game. For about just one half. I think you all know what I'm talking about. Before you get there, I wanted to welcome you all to another edition of D3+. Thanks to those who listened to my last episode, but today I got a lot to discuss, from NBA news to the latest in college football. So what do y'all say? Let's get this thing rolling. So to kick things off for this episode, first things first, prayers out to Demaryius Thomas, his family, friends, and past teammates. This was probably the most shocking and heartbreaking news to come out of this past week. This past Sunday, the Broncos took a moment of silence and began the game with only 10 players on offense, saving that last spot for a legend who is not with us anymore. Dozens of past teammates and others around the league reacted to the news from last week, and honestly, I was shook as well. He was only in his early 30s, looked to be in good health, and no one seemed to know how he died initially until as of recently that news was released. So that was some heartbreaking news, but I wanted to take a moment and talk about this before moving on to today's episode. So prayers out to 88. So now that I shared a sad story with you all, I need to kind of turn the tide and share a positive or interesting story that I came across last week as well. So for the new year, I want to start listening to podcasts regularly. It's not that I don't listen to them, but I want to become more of an active and consistent listener while also exploring some other genres and new podcasts. So along with putting on this show on a consistent basis, I want to consume others as well. So that is sort of my New Year's resolution for this upcoming year. But anyways, one podcast that I am a fan of already is Pardon My Take. And last week, they had Kurt Warner on the podcast with them, and they had a really good conversation. They were talking about the past Patriots-Bills game and how bad weather games kind of aren't a fan favorite. Kurt said that he would prefer that NFL teams should always have a dome. That way the playing field is always level for each team. You don't have to battle the elements. I got to disagree here, and a lot of the guys on Part of My Take disagreed as well. Kurt said that he would prefer, he later on went on to share a story of a time that he played in New England, and he played terrible. I think they did his stats. He was like 6 of 20 passing for a total of like 38 yards, and he threw a few interceptions. He blamed it on the weather condition. He just felt like the ball was slipping out of his hand. He didn't like playing in the cold. And I mean, that makes sense. He played for the Rams and Cardinals, who A, have a dome, and 2, are pretty good weather. It's nothing compared to the New England weather. He later said that following that game, he was talking to some opposing players. Guys come out to midfield, they talk and whatnot, and a lot of them are good friends, played in college together, no matter, but some guys do like to talk, and one of the players he said he was talking to said that the Patriots rub Vaseline on the bottom of their cleats to help with traction, and it melts the snow when it comes into contact. Does this actually work? I was baffled by what he said. I was so shook. Like, I couldn't believe what he just said, and I was baffled. And I don't know who needs to, but someone needs to do an experience, or just let me an experiment, and just let me know if this actually works. Please, someone do it. Anyways, they kept talking about this, and they went on to talk about how Mac Jones wore a scuba suit that night to stay warm in the treacherous New England weather. Wow, an effing scuba suit? Like, no one would have thought about that one, especially not me. And it turns out that this isn't an original idea, as this was an idea passed on from Brian Hoyer, who is the veteran on the Patriots QB depth chart, who in turn got this tip from the one and only Tom Brady. But the fact that Tom Brady has been doing this for most of his playing career, and no one has been made aware of this, it's shocking. Maybe people have, but I mean, this was news to me. And I feel like this is a story that should have been public knowledge before, I mean, as of recent. Anyways, the moral of this story, it's not about battling the weather. It's not finding ways to win in crappy games. Like, as you saw, the Patriots had a good game plan, and they ran the ball 40-plus times, and they got the job done on defense and on the ground. But the moral of this story is that having a veteran presence in the locker room is always key, because they know a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two. I mean, if Kurt had at the time a longtime veteran with him that night in New England, who maybe even would have played for New England or like played against New England regularly, maybe that veteran would have known that, hey, a scuba suit or putting Vaseline on the bottom of your cleats to hopefully give them a better chance at performing well in terrible weather, big games like that. So basically what I'm saying is if they had a veteran presence who knew these inside tips that would have helped Kurt perform better, helped the team perform better, maybe they win that game that night in New England in what he was referencing. But having a guy who has been around the league a bit may be a huge factor in how well teams compete throughout a season and where they play. So with that being said, that kind of goes for all sports. As we've seen at all levels in all types of sports, a veteran presence and having veteran guys may be better for a team than being just outright young and talented. I mean, this is clearly evident in NBA young teams. Despite being talented, with no veteran presence, no experience on the court, it's going to be tough to win games, even if you have a talented coach or a guy who knows these players well. For example, you're talking about I want to bring up like the Orlando Magic, the Detroit Pistons, the Sacramento Kings, like other teams like that. These guys have young stars, guys who are highly touted recruits going into college, and they were top draft picks. They have all the talent and youth in the world, but they're not good. They're not winning games. And this can also go for college hoops. As I said, it goes for all levels. My example here, in the early 2010s, Bo Ryan, the Wisconsin Badgers head coach, had elite basketball teams year out, due to his system of retention. The Wisconsin Badgers basketball team at the beginning of the 2010s won numerous Big Ten titles, made it to the Elite Eight, Final Four, and even appeared in an NCAA championship game, which they lost to Duke. But how do they do this? How do they consistently have good teams that are going to go deep into March Madness? Well, they had guys who bought into the system, they put in their time, and by the time they were seniors, they got to reap all the benefits. But that experience they got as underclassmen helped them succeed and build a winning program. So that system, the Badgers coach made players stay for all 4 years. It was very rare that a Wisconsin basketball player went one and done. Ben Brust stayed all 4 years. Sam Decker stayed all 4 years. Frank Kaminsky stayed all 4 years. Why do they do this? Because they don't play freshmen. They play the sophomores, juniors, and seniors because these guys know how to win. They know how to handle themselves. They're more mature. But, I mean, the one and done culture in college basketball is so prevalent, like Duke. They're just fortunate to have Coach K, but a lot of their guys are one and done. But the years they won championships, the years they went deep, who they have on the team? They had the Plumlee brothers, who stayed all 4 years. Emile Jefferson stayed all 4 years. They had these leaders, these captains, these experienced guys who could lead these young guys along with a great coach. But these guys bought into the system. They stayed all 4 years. They gained value experience, got mature, and that's how they got it done. So a lot of times, like I said, like the one-and-done system, guys go and play 1 year, and then they make that jump to professional ranks because until as of recently, you couldn't go from high school to pros anymore. They made that, I guess, illegal after like LeBron and the last couple guys who did that. So having a high-profile recruit who could be in the NBA 18, oh, this is where the system flaws, though. So they may be great. They may see great success in college. But now you have to rely on these experienced guys because it's very hard telling a guy who is a top recruit who could be in the NBA at the age of 18 that he has to sit and wait 4 years. I mean, that's a hard sell. And in turn, Wisconsin lost out on many top talented recruits. They still are losing out on top talented recruits. Guys out of Wisconsin in the past year, Jalen Johnson went to Duke, now he's on the Hawks. Tyler Hero went to Kentucky, played 1 year, now he's on the Heat. Jordan McCabe, he's still in college, but he's had to transfer around. His college career isn't what everyone had thought it would be, but they've missed out on top recruits because of this. Regardless, though, having older, experienced vets, no matter the level of play, will provide a team with an advantage. So there's some news. That's just something I want to do in the new year, something I want to get more in tune with. And I mean, like I said, I want to listen to more podcasts like that because you learn something each time. I had no idea that Vaseline melts snow. I had no reason why teams struggle in New England, and New England has a perfect system because like they're just used to it. So, I mean, that's my plan moving forward. I want to make podcasts. I want to consume podcasts. But I was also glad that I got to share this story with you and build off of it. So, let's kick things over to the NFL now. So I kicked this episode off by announcing it's story time, and I got a story for you guys. And now it's like a really good part of the show, so let me share my experience from this past weekend. This past weekend, I was lucky enough to attend Sunday Night Football in Green Bay at Lambeau Field to witness the greatest rivalry in sports. Yes, I'm talking Bears-Packers. Man, and it was a fantastic day. So I was invited by some friends. They had an extra ticket, drove us up to Green Bay, and we made the trip up, got to Green Bay around 4-ish in the afternoon. From there on, we got drinks, food, tailgated a bit, and then made our way over to the stadium. So the tailgating, first of all, is a trip, because not only are there thousands upon thousands and thousands of people hoarding the streets and packing into bars and like, making their way to the stadium, partying it up in the parking lots, but I mean, I'm talking everyone. Everyone and their brother from the age of 6 upwards to 90 was out there in the 35-degree weather, getting drunk, having a good time, regardless. I mean, not the 6-year-olds. It's Wisconsin. Maybe the 6-year-olds were having a good time, too. Who knows? But, I mean, so after getting a little bit buzzed up, we headed over to the stadium, and we took a picture at the Lambeau Leap statue. We saw the ginormous Lambeau and Lombardi statues. I mean, if you've been to a stadium, like, they usually have statues outside decorating, like, top moments in their franchise history, top players. But, I mean, usually they're kind of, like, life-ish size, but these things were giant. Like, I'd say they're 20 or 25 feet tall. But it was crazy. They're massive. And then after taking some pictures and, like, enjoying the atmosphere, we caught the tail end of Football Night in America. And now here's, like, the really cool part of the story that at first, I didn't really think about it until after the game. So Sunday Night Football, they cut back to Rodney Harrison and Collinsworth outside the stadium. And so we got there in perfect time just to be on TV for that final cutback, which is really cool. But afterwards, me and my friends, we're finishing our drinks, turned around, we're planning our next move. Like, hey, do we go to the bathroom? Are we making our way in? What's our first stop in the stadium? And then randomly, I'm getting tapped on the shoulder. And to my surprise, it's Rodney Harrison telling me to enjoy the game, and then he took off. He sprinted up those steps and ran in the stadium, and it's crazy. I got to see him and the crew sprint in the stadium, and I couldn't believe it. I turned around, and I was just, like, dumbfounded. I was starstruck, actually. I didn't even know what had happened until I processed it, and it was crazy. I mean, of all people to tap me on the shoulder, especially when I'm in enemy territory, like I said, I was in a Matt Forte jersey. It was crazy that it was Rodney Harrison. Anyways, fast forward, we get into the stadium, find our seats, and they were fantastic seats. We were in one of the end zones, just like 6 or 7 rows out, so we had fantastic seats, and we got to witness what turned out to be a very exciting football game to everyone's surprise. I mean, big plays all night from both teams, and we all know the outcome of this one, but overall, I freaking loved it. I mean, it was fantastic. Lambeau was unreal. The atmosphere was out of this world. It was a great game, it turned out to be. It wasn't even terrible weather. I think the winds were at like 5 miles per hour. Even though it was 35, I was a little bit bundled up. I mean, it was fantastic. So good weather, great game, good friends, good people. I mean, and surprisingly, there's a ton of Bears fans as well, which I could have expected. But I mean, making the trip up to Green Bay on a Sunday night and then making it home to Chicago, I got home at 2:30. I don't even know what the time the people in Chicago got home. But, I mean, I wasn't alone, wasn't outnumbered, which helped a bit, made it a little more enjoyable. But, I mean, it was a great game, and yes, the Bears lost, but it was fantastic. And I want to say, like, even if you aren't a fan of either team, a real football fan would really enjoy making a trip out to Lambeau. So I would urge people to do it. It was a great night. I strongly suggest not working the Monday morning after the game because I was exhausted. But anyways, this was actually turned out to be a more important game than people understand in terms of the rivalry, but also the playoff implications as well. So Aaron Rodgers became the winningest Packer quarterback against the Bears. They now hold like an 8-game lead over the whole rivalry. But this game even had some playoff implications as well. So despite the Bears' poor record, they somehow were categorized as in the hunt a week or two ago. But, I mean, that isn't the case anymore, as they're 4-8, I believe, and then other teams now are sitting at 6-7. I think there's a 4-way tie at 6-7 just outside the wild card. And then with the Cardinals losing that following Monday night to the Rams, the Packers moved into the top spot due to that head-to-head tiebreaker, which saw that crazy interception by Rasul Douglas early in the season. So with that win, the Packers, who were down at halftime, again, surprising, got a much-needed victory, and here's how the rest of the playoffs go in order. So sticking with the NFC, Like I said, Packers sit atop the standings. However, it is a three-way tie at the top, so it's Packers at 10-3, the Buccaneers one spot behind them at 10-3, and then it's the Cardinals at 10-3, and leading the NFC East goes the Dallas Cowboys at 9-4. Then, now with a three-team wild card field, it'll be the Rams who are at 9-4, just one game behind the Cardinals in their division. And then the 49ers trending upwards, they're sitting at 7-6, and the final wild card playoff spot, Washington football team sitting at 6-7. But right behind them is, very surprisingly, the Vikings, Eagles, Falcons, and Saints, all at 6-7. So that final wild card spot, the final two actually, are up for grabs. No, anyone can get it, and that makes every single game to finish this year something huge. Now taking a look at the AFC, it is the Kansas City Chiefs at the top. Right behind them go the New England Patriots and Tennessee Titans, both sitting at 9-4, one game out of the first seed. Then it's the Baltimore Ravens, who lead the AFC North at 8-5. And then these final wild card spots, it goes Chargers 8-6, Colts 7-6, and Bills 7-6. But much like the NFC, the next four teams are all 7-6. So the Colts, Bills, then the Browns, Bengals, and Broncos, all at 7-6. So these final wild card spots are all up for grabs. In both divisions, the end of the season is approaching, making every single game huge for the rest of the NFL. I mean, I'm excited. Playoff season, it's December, it's winter, but do these final playoff games going into the playoffs as well? This I don't even think there's a Super Bowl front runner, to be honest. But every game matters here on out. Playoffs are going to be fantastic, so I'm excited for an exciting end of the NFL season. Now, but switching gears here, sticking with football though, playoff football to be precise, the championship matchup in Division 3 is set. And man, this is going to be a fantastic game, and it's really cool. Let me get into it. Let's break it down. This year's matchup will feature the North Central College Cardinals taking on the University of Mary Hardin Baylor Crusaders. This championship game, known as the Stag Bowl, will take place in Canton, Ohio, yes, the home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it will feature the top two teams in Division III football. How cool is that? And it's going to be an amazing matchup. Both teams coming into the matchup undefeated. North Central is 13-0, while Mary Hardin Baylor is 14-0. And both teams are coming off huge victories in the semifinal games. Mary Hardin Baylor, the 2018 national champions, knocked off the Warhawks of Whitewater, who, it shocked me, but they really handled Whitewater. And it looked like the Warhawks couldn't be stopped, but let me tell you, the Crusaders definitely put an end to their run. Whitewater was undefeated at the time and just knocked off their team in the quarterfinals by 50 points, 49 to be exact, but 50-point win in the quarterfinals to advance to the semis. And Mary Hardin Baylor the week before had won as well in a big way. But they knocked off the Warhawks 24-7. And I think they took a 17-0 lead sometime in the second quarter, and then Whitewater scored right before half. So it was 17-7 at half. Mary Hardin Baylor shut them out in the second half, added an extra touchdown for insurance, and they took that one 24-7. But the real shocker here, they held Whitewater to less than 300 total yards of offense and less than 70 yards on the ground. The Crusaders used a huge second quarter. Like I said, they took a 17-7 lead in the half, and they never looked back. And as for the Cardinals of North Central, who are the 2019 Division III football champions, they're coming off an impressive victory over Mount Union. They won that game 26-13. And this is crazy because if you think of D3 football, you think Mount Union. It was St. Thomas, but like that's a powerhouse. Mount Union is a powerhouse program, and North Central handled them 26-13. The Cardinals, who usually do their damage by the air, they put up a staggering 293 yards on the ground. And the real shocker here is they held Mount Union to less than 300 yards total. That's crazy. They had almost 300 yards on the ground, and they held Mount Union to less than 300 yards total. Crazy. And the Cardinals gave up a touchdown on Union's first drive, but after that, it was all Cardinals. They scored in every quarter, and they didn't give up another point until late in the fourth quarter, and they took that one again by way of 26-13. So the championship game is going to be exciting. It's going to be intense. It's number one, number two, and here's a real kicker. It's going to be on primetime television tonight on ESPNU. So a Division III football game, nationally televised, 7 p.m. Eastern, and Let me tell you, you're not going to want to miss this one. Cardinals Crusaders, that's tonight, the 17th. It's going to be a good one. I know I'll be tuning in. Don't forget to miss it. Well, people, if you notice the title of this episode, we have now made it to the part of the show where I tell you why I will never bet on college basketball and why you should probably rethink your decisions on betting on college basketball. For the fourth week in a row, we have a new number one team in college hoops. We've seen Gonzaga lose. We've seen Duke lose. And now Purdue was upset. It's crazy. Some may be waiting for March Madness, but as the NCAA coined it, we are watching December delirium right now. Another shocker early in the year was, so not only have we seen a handful of upsets of the number one teams, there have been a handful of upsets in other games. Earlier this year, I watched a one-win Iona team beat a ranked Alabama team on the road. And that Alabama team, of course, went on to upset Gonzaga, moving to the top 10. But, I mean, because it is so up in the air and it's so uncertain, like the uncertainty of college hoops week in and week out is the number one and only reason why I will not bet on college basketball. College basketball is just so up in the air. On any given night, a team can knock off another team. And conference play is even more challenging. Every night, you're going to see two rivals square off each night with each team giving it their best. They're going to go at each other. It's going to be neck and neck no matter what. I've seen a 20-0 Duke team struggle against a 10-10 Syracuse team, or you see the 25-0 Kentucky team struggle with a mediocre SEC team back in the day. Like, it's crazy. And that's because these are two rival schools. Conference games matter. You want a good seed in the conference tournament. But every night, each team's going to give it their best. And it doesn't matter about ranking, record, who's in, who's out. Anything can happen at any time over the course of a season. But basically what I'm saying is that college basketball is just too unpredictable. Even when it looks like one team is a lock and they're the top dog, they got all the rankings going for them, I don't even know what to tell you. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, the spread could be double digits, and it doesn't matter. So, that's my take on it. I mean, betting on sports, any way you look at it, is a gamble, of course. And with all the different types of bets that can be made, it makes it even more challenging. I guess you could bet against the spread. You could even take a money line. You could form a parlay and do even more. So, I guess I should rethink my statement. But, I mean, even betting a spread or something like that, it's even challenging. Shoot, even in FanDuel and DraftKings, you can set a type of fantasy roster every night in hopes of winning a few bucks. That's for professional sports. But no matter what anyone says or how confident someone may be, no bet is safe and no bet is secure because no one truly knows. And it's just unpredictable. You don't know how a team's feeling, how you don't know how this team's week went, like how far did they travel. It's just so unpredictable. And again, these guys are 18 and 19 years old. So you don't know what they're going to do each and every night. And I feel like I could be a successful sports bettor, and no, this was not a paid segment of the show. Just to be clear, I did mention FanDuel and DraftKings, but just to be clear, there's no way an ad, but that's just my thoughts on the whole sports betting industry and the sports betting world, because it's really gaining popularity, and we see every other month, every other year, more and more states are adding gambling and making it legal. But since we're on the topic of college hoops, and there is a new number one, let's take a look at the most recent rankings. So after Purdue had become the number one ranked basketball team for the first time in program history, it wasn't long-lived, as again, they got upset. And we do have a new number one, and it's defending champion, the Baylor Bears. Sitting at 9-0, they are number one. But again, to round out the top, like going down the top five, and in order, it's Baylor 1, Duke 2, Purdue 3, UCLA 4, and Gonzaga sneaks in there at 5. Sneaking its way into the top 10 and all the way up to number 6 goes Alabama. Right behind them is Kansas, Arizona, Villanova, and USC to round out the top 10. Looking at numbers 11 to 20, it goes Iowa State, who is perfect on year, I must add. They are 10-0, the tied for most wins in the country. And then right behind them goes Michigan State, Auburn, and Houston, all with 9 wins. Ohio State's in at 15. Then Seton Hall, Texas, and Tennessee. And then at 19 is another undefeated team, and this one comes as a shocker. It's LSU, 10-0 at 19, and rounding out the top 20 goes Connecticut. Then the final five teams to round out the top 25 goes Kentucky, Xavier, Colorado State, another 10-0 team making their way into the top 25 for the first time this season. And falling all the way from 12 goes Arkansas, sitting at 24, and Texas Tech, number 25. So there are your college rankings. A few surprises in there. I'm very shocked at LSU at 10-0 and the fact that they are tied for the most wins in the country. But, I mean, Colorado State's a surprise as well. Xavier off to a fantastic start, 10-1, and they snuck into the top 25. So, I mean, like I said, this college basketball season's already shaping up to be amazing. Bunch of upsets already. New top 25. I'll take a look at the next top 25 rankings next week. But that's it for College Hoops. Well, sports fans, we've made it to the end. As I discussed in my last one, my last episode went about like 45-ish minutes. I'm going to try and keep them short. This one looking to be less than 30, so more of what I'm aiming for as a goal. But, I mean, we've discussed some interesting news and covered football in the NFL, college, and other college rankings. I discussed why I'll never bet on college hoops, a little more on that. But, again, I want to thank you all again for listening. Don't forget to give me a follow on Twitter. Don't forget to tune in to the Stag Bowl tonight, December 17th. And thanks again for listening. This has been another episode of D3+. Have a good weekend.